Chapter 14. The Nietzsche hadn't just located Harry Dawkins, she'd also reached out and talked with him. Under the circumstances, he'd told her, he'd be delighted to meet with Jonathan, but the meeting would have to happen on his turf. He had time to talk, but he couldn't get back to Washington. "So I told him you'd be happy to come to him," the Nietzsche had explained to Jonathan 5 hours ago when she'd reported in. "You need to get to El Paso, Texas."
"Oh, Christ," Boxers grumped. "What is it about deserts and jungles? Why are we always traipsing off to deserts and jungles?"
"Gotta go where the clientele sends us," Jonathan said with a smile.
"Says the guy who doesn't have to fly the plane."
"Says the guy who bought you an airplane and allows you to fly it," Jonathan corrected. Not only had Jonathan paid for it, two of them, actually, both through fictional companies, he'd also allowed Boxers to pick out the models he wanted. Sometimes Big Guy was happiest when he was bitching about something. The flight to ELP was uneventful, highlighted by perfect weather and direct routing. Once on the ground, Big Guy parked the Beechcraft Hawker 800 at the spot provided by Atlantic Aviation, the local fixed-base operator. Catering to private jet clientele, read rich people, FBOs provided the kinds of amenities that regular air travels would kill for. Showers, lounges, shuttle services, heated hangars, and gas pumps were yours, for a modest fee, of course. Thanks to Vinice's organizational skills, a rental black Suburban was waiting for them at the hangar. To bypass whatever security might lay ahead, Jonathan, Boxers, and Gale all wore their FBI regalia, badges, and windbreakers, thus allowing them to remain armed without question. The Customs and Border Protection Special Operations Group was headquartered at Fort Bliss, an army post located a short ride from the airport. At the main gate, the MP took down the team's fake information, gave them a map of the post, and sent them on their way.
"God, I miss this shit,"
Boxer said as they drove deeper into the facility. Like every other U.S. military establishment, from Gitmo to Fort Knox, Quantico to San Diego Naval Station, Fort Bliss had a community feel to it. The grass was green and impeccably cut, desert climate notwithstanding. Long stretches of houses could have been a suburb of any city, and the students in the elementary and high schools were more educated and better behaved than those at any civilian school in the country. On an army post, neighbors might not know precisely what each other did with his or her workday, but all were united with the common goal of destroying America's enemies and coming home safely again. The friendships formed in military communities lasted forever, as did the enmities.
"Yeah, it was great until it wasn't," Jonathan said.
Once inside Bliss's main gate, Boxers followed the map down Sergeant Major Boulevard to Randolph Street, and finally to Staff Sergeant Sims Street, at the end of which lay what was left of Biggs Army Airfield. Jonathan had never been to this base before, but he was familiar with its history. From the mid-1940s to the mid-60s, it was named Biggs Air Force Base. Sometime in the 70s, he believed, the facility changed hands to the Army. Now it was home of Joint Task Force North, a Defense Department omelet of various agencies dedicated to keeping bad guys from crossing America's southern border illegally. They were very good at their job when they were allowed to do it. The CBP Special Operations Group occupied a collection of high-end office trailers that might have been airdropped into the middle of nowhere. Jonathan had heard a lot of good things about the Border Patrol Tactical Unit, BORTAC, whose existence flew far under most radars. Gifted tactical operators with all the skills of the FBI's hostage rescue team, BORTAC operators were the nation's very best trackers, able to follow just about anyone, just about anywhere, using tactics as old as the Indians and as new as the latest technology.
"Park anywhere, I guess,"
Jonathan said as Boxers pulled the Suburban into a spot among randomly parked vehicles.
"I can't say I'm terribly impressed by the physical security," Gale observed from the back seat.
"They've got eyes in the sky, as far as I know," Jonathan replied.
Boxers added,
"I don't see much either, but I'll bet it's a mistake to rush the place."
"What are we supposed to do from here?" Gale asked. "How do we find Harry Dawkins?"
Jonathan pulled his phone from the pocket of his 511 tactical cargo-style pants. They'd all selected a tactical ensemble to sell the illusion of being Phoebes. It helped that this was how Jonathan and Boxers dressed pretty much every day. On a normal day, Gale's style of dress was efficient yet feminine, more slacks than skirts, and almost always some kind of jacket to cover her Glock. Today, though, she was dressed like the boys. Jonathan was halfway through punching the number Vinice had given him into his phone when he saw a 6-passenger golf cart approaching from behind the farthest office trailer. It was empty except for the driver, and Jonathan recognized him right away.
"Here he comes,"
Boxers said, pointing.
"I guess that resolves the question of whether we're being appropriately watched," Gale said.
They all climbed out of the rental and formed a ragged line in front of the grill. The cart driver swung a wide circle as he approached, pulled to a stop, and set the brake.
"Well, I'll be damned," the driver said. "I hurt just looking at you guys."
"You clean up good,"
Jonathan said. He extended his hand.
"Nice to see you again, Harry."
"And big guy,"
Dawkins said, craning his neck to look Boxers in the eye as they shook hands.
"Allow me to introduce another colleague," Jonathan said. "Harry Dawkins, this is Gale Bonneville, a member of my team. You may call her Special Agent Gerarda Culp of the FBI.
Dawkins coughed out a laugh.
"Wow, now that's a name."
Then he added, "Harry Dawkins." They shook hands.
"I know we haven't met, but weren't you on the other side of some radio traffic while your boss and I were waiting out of Mexico?"
"I was one of several," Gale said. "I've heard a lot about you."
"What are you doing down in Buttscratch, Texas?"
Boxers asked. "TDY, Dawkins said, "temporary duty. I'm attached to Task Force 5, keeping the revolving doors of justice spinning. Catch and release used to be a clever phrase until so many of our guys started getting hurt."
"Part of the price of being expendable," Jonathan said. "It's a shame your guys aren't snail darters or kitty cats. The Twitterverse would demand action."
"Makes you sick, doesn't it? We're guarding the walls, and the network news makes us the bad guys."
Dawkins clapped his hands together once, then planted his fists on his hips. "Mother Hen was a little short on details when she called. In fact, she gave me nothing. So, what can I do for you?"
"You're still DEA, right?"
Jonathan asked.
"As far as I know, unless you're bringing me bad news. By the way, are you a secret agent, too?"
"Special agent,"
Jonathan corrected, knowing that Dawkins had been joking.
"Yes, I'm Neil Bonner, and big guy is..."
"Don't,"
Boxers said. Jonathan laughed.
"This one's good.
I swear to God I'll kick your ass."
"Javier Contara,"
Jonathan said. Dawkins gaped for a second, and then roared with laughter.
"Perfect!"
"I liked you better when you were afraid of me,"
Boxers said.
"Oh, I'm still afraid of you," Dawkins said. "But as long as I've got witnesses, I figure I'm okay."
He turned serious. Well, mostly.
So, do I introduce you as your aliases if we run into people?
Please, Jonathan said. Is there a place where we can chat privately?
Sure.
He gestured to the nearest trailer.
In there. The Bortak guys are all out practicing their snake-eating techniques.
As they walked, Jonathan asked,
So, you said you're with JTF North? What's your role with them?
I can't talk about all of it, Dawkins said, but you might have heard that there's a bit of a problem with drugs flowing across our southern border.
No kidding, Gale said.
Right?
The best-known crisis that no one wants to talk about. So that's what I'm here for, to help put a stop to that.
Are the illegals bringing the drugs?
Gale asked.
Hell yes, they're bringing the drugs, Dawkins snapped. Then he looked sorry.
I'd say a solid 20-25% of the people we detain are muling drugs. The ones with kids are often the worst offenders because they understand the optics of detaining kids.
Well, they are kids, Gale said.
Yeah, but they're not the mules' kids. Half of them have either been kidnapped or sold or are being trafficked in plain sight. The best thing we can do for them is pull them away from their guardians. Honest to God, it makes you sick if you think too hard about it.
That or it makes you want to open fire on them,
Boxer said.
That too, but we're pretty much hamstrung. That asshole in the White House won't let us detain but a few of them, and of those we do detain, we have to let them go after a minute and a half.
They'd arrived at the base of the stairs to the trailer.
I mean, look at this place. Hundreds of millions of dollars pumped into a daycare center with guns. It's insane.
The inside of the trailer looked like a collection of college classrooms. Four individual classroom setups divided by electric-powered folding walls. In each classroom, rows of tables hosted ergonomic rolling chairs, all of which were oriented toward a front wall that was all erasable whiteboard. The place smelled like new carpet.
Nice digs, Jonathan said.
They treat us well, Dawkins agreed. They just don't let us do our jobs. Nobody wants to recognize the fact that roughly 100% of the illegals who cross have paid the cartels for the right to do so. For goddamn certain sure, every coyote who smuggles them in has paid tribute to the cartels. Then the cartels turn around and take the money to fund mass murders against their rivals.
Jonathan waited him out. Dawkins seemed primed for more, but then he raised his hands in surrender.
Sorry, he said. This shit really frosts my flakes.
I can tell,
Jonathan said. Dawkins gestured for everyone to help themselves to seats around the nearest table. Jonathan and Gale sat, but Boxers remained standing.
Okay, then, my fictional Phoebe friends, what can I do for you?
Jonathan leaned into the table.
Do the names Craig and Connie Kendall mean anything to you?
Dawkins sat taller and reflexively shot looks over both shoulders.
Holy shit, that gets right to it, doesn't it?
Jonathan waited for the rest. He saw a cloud cross Dawkins' face.
What do the names mean to you?
Dawkins countered.
A lot of dead people and at least two missing children, Jonathan said, all within the last 3 days.
Missing children?
They're missing children, Gale said. Ryder and Jeffrey Kendall.
How did they go missing?
I was hoping you could tell me, Jonathan said. All we know is that they were nabbed by people dressed as police officers, who, parenthetically, killed a real police officer and a priest.
So how did you come to be impersonating FBI agents?
Focus, Harry, Boxers said. The common denominator in all of this is the Kendalls. Now it's your turn.
I thought the Kendalls had been arrested, Dawkins said.
This wasn't going anywhere. Jonathan reset the conversation and caught Dawkins up to current knowledge.
Wow,
Dawkins said when Jonathan was done. That's a lot of killing in just one day.
So what's the deal?
Jonathan asked.
What did the Kendalls know or do that makes everyone want to hurt their kids?
It has to be more than just keeping Mom and Dad quiet. There's no exit plan for that.
Yeah, Dawkins said. Something in his demeanor changed again. He would not have made the world's best poker player.
What?
Gale said. Apparently she saw it, too. Dawkins's face went blank.
Give me a second for this, he said. There's shit I'm not supposed to tell you, and then there's shit that I need clearance to talk to President Darmond about. This is the latter.
For the first time since they'd arrived, Boxers became fully engaged. He folded himself into a chair and moved it in close to the table.
First, some background, Dawkins said.
Oh, shit.
Boxers said, and he pushed away again.
Cut him some slack, Jonathan snapped.
To Dawkins.
Go.
Dawkins cleared his throat. This all goes back to the flow of shit and bad people across our border. I presume I don't have to mince my words with PC bullshit while I'm with you. You take a Muslim out of Syria, wrap him in a Juan Valdez outfit, and he looks a lot like a Central American. We've caught a few hundred of these asshats over the years, some of them two or three times. But we know that hundreds of others have gotten through. They're not officially my problem, not professionally.
They're everybody's problem, Gale said.
Exactly. I've always wondered if they had anything to do with that business of shooting up the football fields and shit a while back.
It was Jonathan's turn to keep a poker face, a skill at which he was highly accomplished. Security Solutions had played a significant role in stopping that carnage. The world thought the FBI had taken the bad guys out, thus the faux credentials. He was relieved that Dawkins did not press for confirmation one way or the other.
So, anyway, we've had this stream of bad guys who have established a conduit not just for drugs, but all kinds of other bad shit.
Weapons, explosives, nerve agents. He let that verbal turd float in the punch bowl until it registered with the others.
Nerve agents?
Boxers repeated it as a question, perhaps wondering if his hearing had faltered.
VX and GB that we know of, Dawkins said, his voice barely above a whisper.
Even back in the day, we chased the cheap labor market to make the most hazardous shit on the planet, and now it's coming back on us.
We don't make chemical weapons anymore, Gale said.
It was hard to tell from her tone if she was being ironic. Jonathan assumed that she had to be. This wasn't their first dance with that shit.
Maybe that's why we sent the contracts down Mexico way, he said.
Want to make your head explode? Dawkins asked with a chuckle. Try to work out a flow chart that will make our geopolitical decision-making south of the Rio Grande make any sense at all.
I'd settle for one that wasn't flat-out self-destructive,
Boxers said.
And you know what? Gale asked. None of it makes a difference.
You're absolutely right, Jonathan agreed. One of the aspects of my work that I've always appreciated is the purity that comes from dealing with things as they are. How they got that way isn't my expertise.
To Dawkins, how big a problem is it? The chemical weapons?
I don't even know how to approach that question, Dawkins said. That's nasty shit. A little dabble, do ya?
What I'm asking, I guess, is if this is a one-off, or is it a trend?
Call it a trend in the early stages, Dawkins said. We found canisters on three illegals. Assume that we catch 20%, that means we've got 15 containers in circulation somewhere. Obviously, that's a guess.
What kind of containers? Gale asked. How's it transported?
Dawkins held his hands about 12 inches apart. Most look like stainless steel coffee thermoses. In fact, that was their Achilles heel, the stainless steel.
What refugee, he made finger quotes, brings their coffee across in a $100 thermos?
They're not stupid, Jonathan said. They'll adapt.
We captured one big mother of a container, too, Dawkins said. Think beer keg.
Holy crap,
Boxers said.
Jonathan asked, what do the cartels plan to do with nerve agents? Are they opening up a new line in the terror business?
Another area where we're not sure, Dawkins said. There's a lot of money to be made selling weapons to the great Satan's enemies. We've got all kinds of suspected terror cells in the U.S. You know that. Hamas, Al-Qaeda, ISIS, Chechens, Russians, MS-13, the whole nine yards. They're everywhere. But we're hamstrung against doing anything against them until they do something against us, Boxer said.
So, the theory is that the cartels are the distribution network. Like a franchisor.
Essentially, yes.
How does this involve the Kendalls? Gale asked.
It's in the chatter we've picked up, Dawkins explained. You know that they were the big dog enforcers for the C-squared in the USA, right?
Tell me what that means to you,
Jonathan said.
They were the folks who made sure that distribution channels stayed effective and that disruptions were righted as soon as possible.
Been working for the government for too long, Harry,
Boxer said.
What the hell does that mean?
It means that they killed people and broke legs.
Allegedly, Gale added.
Again, Jonathan assumed the presence of irony.
No, they pretty much did it, Dawkins said. Yada yada, jury and all that, but Connie Kendall has no place to go.
Were they killing people with VX agent?
Jonathan asked.
I'm not seeing the nexus between chemweps and two-bit enforcers.
Dawkins raised a finger. Ah, be careful. Respect your adversary, remember? There was nothing two-bit about the Kendalls' operation. They were efficient and very smart. Some very tough dudes were scared shitless of them.
Weapons, Gale prompted.
Yeah, the weapons. We don't have anything that connects them to that directly, but there's a lot of chatter that includes them. We believe their code name within the C-squared is Bluebird, and we've listened to some intercepts that use that handle in the same sentence with the juice, which we believe to mean the chemweps.
This is the big secret?
Boxers asked. He seemed disappointed.
That's the root of it, Dawkins said. If the Kendalls are who we think they are, we can twist the remaining one to turn on Armand Cortez and expose the distribution network.
For the drugs or the weapons?
All of it, Dawkins said. That Bluebird link to the juice is a really big deal.
So why is everybody who touched their kids being killed? Gale asked.
Maybe they know too much,
Boxer said.
Who, the kids? Jonathan said. No way. If that were the case, why not just kill them? They're being used as leverage.
By us? Gale asked. As in the U.S.?
Dawkins said nothing.
Harry?
Jonathan pressed.
I'd like to think that I lived in a world where that sort of suggestion would be dead on arrival, Dawkins said.
We did kidnap them?
Jonathan asked. Man, that was not where he thought this conversation would go.
I have no way to say one way or the other, Dawkins said. I'm DEA, not FBI. The chemical weapons end is all Phoebes, and their history of staying in their ethical lanes is not all that stellar in recent years.
Jesus,
Boxer said.
I'm not saying that's the case, Dawkins said.
But I can tell you this. The reason why this is all such a big secret is to keep the FBI from finding out about the Bluebird connection and somehow throwing a stick into our spokes.
Why would they do that?
Gale asked. She looked shocked. I'm not saying that they would, just as I'm not saying that Uncle Sam had anything to do with kidnapping those boys. I'm just saying that I would be surprised if they did not.
God damn, Jonathan said.
He cocked his head as another thought arrived.
What do you know about Rafael Iglesias?
Dawkins laughed.
Well, aren't you, by God, hitting homers today? He's a skank lawyer who works for a skank client.
Cortez?
Boxer's guest. The one and only.
Here's a little quid pro quo for you, Jonathan said. A thank you gift for tipping your hand to us. Iglesias is involved with all of this, too.
Well, he's their lawyer.
More than that, Jonathan interrupted. He arranged the boys' kidnapping. If the kidnapping is about chemical weapons, then that puts Iglesias squarely in the hot seat.
Dawkins stewed on that. Have you paid him a visit yet?
We wanted to wait to hear what you had to say, Gale said.
Then don't reach out to him, Dawkins said. Not yet. If too many people get too spooked, everything just dries up.
That's fine for you, Jonathan said. You're trying to build a case and put people in jail. I'm trying to rescue a couple of scared kids and bring justice.
Dawkins laughed. Have I heard that speech before? Sight of the angels and all that? Jonathan felt his ears redden.
You know our way is better, right, Harry?
Boxers asked. He leaned in closer.
Justice is a lot more satisfying than process.
Dawkins recoiled, sort of.
Are you recruiting me?
The thought hadn't occurred to Jonathan, but it wasn't a bad idea.
Are you recruitable?
He expected a hard no, so he was surprised to see the temptation in Dawkins' eyes.
What's the offer?
Jonathan laughed.
You've ridden in our rodeo before. More of the same, but this time in clothing that fits.
Their last encounter had begun with Dawkins naked, later wrapped in the clothing of dead people. Dawkins took his time answering, and Jonathan led him. The guy had already proven himself to be an honorable man and a fierce fighter. Jonathan couldn't imagine why he'd walk away from a solid job and a pension to wallow in the mud with the Security Solutions team on the wrong side of the law. But if he wanted a slot, Digger would make a slot happen.
Ah, what the hell, Dawkins said at last. If I said no, you'd just burn up my phone lines with a lot of questions. Is this an all-or-nothing deal?
I don't know what that means.
I've got a buttload of vacation coming, and I can't think of a better way to spend it than crushing C-squared and seeing Armand Cortez either dead or in prison forever. When that's done, I might want to go back to the day job.
Jonathan looked to Gale and then to Boxers.
Any thoughts?
Give him the speech about what we're not,
Boxers said. The speech needed to be delivered, but it felt odd to get the request from Big Guy. Jonathan turned back to Dawkins.
When we were together last time, things got pretty violent, and quite a few people died.
I remember.
Well, it's important for you to understand that that's not what we're about. We don't do revenge, and we don't do assassinations.
You're not murderers, Dawkins said.
Exactly right, Jonathan said. If your mission in joining us is finding a shortcut to fitting Armand Cortez for a coffin,
I get it.
No, I need to say it, and you need to listen to me, Jonathan said. We really are on the side of the angels. We do what needs to be done to accomplish our larger mission.
Right now, that mission is to bring the Kendall boys to safety. All this that we have done here is merely about defining the source of their danger. If we bring Cortez down as a collateral effect, then that's fine. But we're not interested in doing DEA's or the FBI's job for them. You good with that?
Absolutely, Dawkins said. He looked sincere. Now, are you okay with mine being a limited engagement?
You can't ask detailed questions about what we've done in the past or how we get behind-the-scenes stuff done now, Gale said. A short-term engagement should mean a limited engagement as well.
Understood, Dawkins said.
And about going back to the day job, Jonathan said. You understand that if things go just a little bit wrong, you'll have no job to go back to.
And possibly a jail cell with your name on it,
Boxers added.
How's that different from where we stand now? Dawkins said. Just telling you what I've said so far is a felony.
Another good point.
Jonathan polled his team. Big guy?
I'm good, Boxer said, so long as I get to shoot him if he annoys me.
Gunslinger?
It took her a few seconds.
Sure.
Jonathan clapped his hands together.
Okay, then. Welcome aboard. When can you be ready?
When do you need me?
When can you be ready?
Jonathan asked. 10 minutes to send an email declaring myself to be on vacation, and another 20 to throw some personals in a bag.
30 minutes, then, Jonathan said. If you're not on board in 60, we take off without you.